Gang, I'd like to welcome new sponsor, True Hemp Science, full spectrum CBD products to the show. Now, gang, I've been using these products for a couple of months now, namely their number 81 Relax and Sleep CBD oil. You can find them at truehempscience.com. Now, listen, gang. They create handcrafted quality, full-spectrum CBD products by sourcing the highest-grade hemp from around the world. All unique, all top quality. They offer a complete line of CBD products, including full-spectrum CBD oils, tinctures, CBD skincare lotions, CBD sports rubs, which I've been using, CBD gummies, which I tried, and they're absolutely fantastic, and the CBD gluten-free chocolates. By choosing True Hemp Science, you know it's going to be good, so you can stay focused. Now, gang, I was having some trouble sleeping, and I was having some pain in, like, the palm of my hands, both of my hands. It was weird, and it was getting weird when I was playing. And a couple of months ago, I was at a farmer's market, and I ran into this guy, Simon, and his and he was out there with the True Hemp Science, like, booth. And I got together and started talking with him, and I got some balm for my hands to try and, like, ease the pain, and the pain actually went away. And I ended up getting the number 81 Relax and Sleep True Hemp Science CBD oil. It's a full-spectrum CBD oil. It's absolutely fantastic. I've been sleeping like a baby. This last weekend, I went to Vegas to play a show, and we got in the night before. I was up really late, and I woke up really early, and I was having a hard time trying to get a nap in before this big show we were playing for this convention. And I had a couple of drops of this CBD oil, number 81, the Relax and Sleep thing, and it helped me sleep for 4 hours. And listen, gang, I've been waking up really, really rested, like feeling like I had slept. You know, like not waking up like, oh my God, what do I have to do? Or like waking up like, oh, I need to sleep more. It's like I wake up, I stretch, and I just feel like, wow, I really slept. Go to truehempscience.com and use the code HDIGH and get something special. Purchase $65 worth of regular price products and receive 296 milligrams of their number 81 distillate. Number 81 is great for rest, relaxation, and sleep. That's the one I'm talking about. That's the one that's been helping me sleep, helping me wake up rested, and feeling ready to take on the day. Focused and ready to go. That's True Hemp Science. Find them at truehempscience.com. Now listen, gang, for the next few weeks, I'll be telling you about some other products I've been using, even their CBG. They're number 41. Boy, that one really gives you focus and gets you ready to take on your day. But right now, I'm telling you, go to truehempscience.com/HDIGH. Use the code HDIGH, and with your $65 purchase, you'll receive 296 milligrams of the number 81, which is great for rest, relaxation, and sleep. Go to truehempscience.com. This stuff really works, you guys. Let's get down.
Did I get here? And now here is your host, I'm Johnny.
When we talk. All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good week, whatever it is you did this week. I'm having a good week, man. I want to let you guys know that today, Friday, January 14th, Skyrocket is playing at Antone's. We're very excited to be playing there tonight. The doors are at 8. The show starts at 9. We're doing one two-hour set. Normally, we do two sets. But look, we're trying to keep things safe as possible. We figure, you know, we'll go in, we'll do the show, two-hour set. That's what we were going to play anyway. And then we'll take off, all right? We'll all be good with that. Hopefully, come on out and check it out. Go to the Antone's. Look them up online or go to skyrockettheband.com to get tickets. That's tonight. Friday, January 14th, Skyrocket, the band playing at Antone's. Now, earlier this week, on Sunday, we went to Las Vegas to play a show on Monday night for Visit Austin at the MGM Grand Hotel, conference center in one of their giant ballrooms. It was fantastic. It was super fancy, man. They had these huge video screens that projected our video stuff, and it was a huge stage with like full production and wireless mics. Always fun to go and like work a room like that with a lot of people that had never seen us before from all over the country, which was really, really fun. Anyway, it's always fun to travel with Skyrocket. You know, we have a good time together. We make each other laugh. Everyone's generally having a good time throughout the experience. You know, there's not like a downer person that's like, fuck, I wish we weren't here. Man, I hate traveling. Like that kind of stuff. You know how that can bring a band down? So there was all of us. We were hanging out, having a good time. We got in Sunday night. A few of us went to this Mexican place. I don't know if that was the best idea for me to do. but we went to this Mexican place in I don't even know what hotel it was in. I can't even tell anymore. You know, when I'm there, I'll be honest with you. Look, I know it has to be there. I had a great time playing. I'm grateful to go there and play shows. But when I go to Las Vegas, I get like freaked out, man. It grosses me out. Like, if any of you remember like the story in the Bible in the New Testament when Jesus goes to the temple and they're having the big bazaar and they're selling stuff or whatever, and then he freaks out. That's what I think of Vegas when I go there. I'm like, you know, I don't think this is right. Like something here is not right. And, you know, it's not supposed to be there. They use a tremendous amount of electricity and water just to keep it going in the middle of nowhere. And then this is, oh God, this drives me nuts. I actually took a photo of this and I'll post it on our How Did I Get Here Facebook page. I'm not kidding. When you go into the bathroom, there's a sticker on the mirror that says, help us protect our planet, conserve water. During your stay, your sheets will only be changed upon request through housekeeping. Towels left on the bathroom floor will be changed for fresh towels. If you want to keep your towels, just hang them on the hook there, okay? Then it says save energy. Save thousands of kilowatt hours each time you leave your room by turning off non-essential lights and adjusting the thermostat back to its original setting. Dude, that's Vegas. Have you ever seen the McDonald's sign on Vegas? It takes up like half the energy of Austin just to run that fucking sign. It's insane. So like you go there and you know, granted it is fun, you know, it just seems like, and I'm not going and seeing like the real Vegas, like where people live. I'm just there on the strip for, you know, less than 48 hours, like 36 hours on there. I get in Sunday evening, have some dinner, have some cocktails, walk around with my friends, shoot the shit, sleep, wake up, walk around, take a nap, play a show, sleep, get up, fly out. That's usually my Vegas experience. I don't normally spend much time. It's usually not even two nights. Usually we fly in the day of the gig, which, you know, can be a little freaky, but we went with 2 days before, or sorry, going in the day before, just because of all the weird flight stuff that's going on. Anyway, so I did. I went to Vegas. Rosie stayed with my cousin Emily. She had a great time hanging out with Emily and her dog Rigby. What else has been going on? Got that show tonight with Skyrocket. Lots of stuff. Gang, I have a great show for you today. I do. I have Jason Vandegrift and David J. Pierce. They're co-producers and composers from Denton. Well, actually, one of them lives somewhere else now. But anyway, they go under the name The Lord Baltimores, and they released a self-titled LP just this past fall. It's mostly instrumental. It's absolutely fantastic. It was recorded at Echo Lab in Denton between July 2020 and September 2020. There's a great video for the song Qualifier. Now, Jason Vandegrift and David Pierce kind of balance each other out. Each guy brings a different sort of like strength to the partnership. Jason Vandegrift oversaw the rhythm section while David Pierce focused on the horn string arrangements and all the synth stuff. It's fantastic stuff. There's fantastic string and horn arrangements, and the record sounds like a 70s detective movie or like a blaxploitation movie from the 70s. It's great. It's fucking great. I loved listening to it and really enjoyed talking to these two dudes and getting to know them. They're fascinating. They're super intelligent. They've been working in different fields for a long time, and this is kind of a project. They don't know if they're going to play live. They don't know what they're going to do. They probably don't even know if they're going to do it again. But I love it when people do something for art's sake. Like, let's create something and make it and put it out there, and let's make something fucking great that no one, you know, no one's ever heard before. Let's make some music and put it out there in the world. And I have great respect for people like that. So please enjoy my conversation with Jason Vandegrift and David J. Pierce from The Lord Baltimores. Let's get down. Wait, I think it was at Trees or
could have been Clearview or somewhere, but you guys were kind of hot right then. You just got signed, and I was in a band called the Von Erichs, and years ago. So, and then Alex told me we had a Jane Weedland connection or something. Did you work with her?
Oh yeah, a lot. Yeah.
Oh really? Okay.
Yeah. What was the Von Erichs? I remember that. Did we hang out?
It was so long ago. I just remembered that I was stoked that we were on the bill because we were super new. Like we had just kind of got started. It had to be probably late 2000 or something.
Okay.
But I don't know if we hung out. I don't even remember. I knew that I did that show.
All right.
And then you worked with Jane, and I actually recorded a record at her house in Wisconsin with the Von Erichs. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Alex told me to ask you how you knew her or whatever. So she's a great.
She was married to one of my managers of that band, Gowdy. We were first getting started, and she and I became really good friends. And she and I wrote a lot of stuff. There was a song that we wrote together that was on that Gowdy record, but I wrote a lot with her and Charlotte. But actually, then later on, I ended up becoming really good friends with Kathy Valentine as well, and we actually have a band together here.
Oh, okay,
that's awesome! Yeah.
Wow. He told me to ask you, and I was like, "Well, he's like, didn't you have a Jane connection?"
Small world. How you doing, David?
Anyone?
I'm doing well.
I'm sorry to hijack, Dave.
No, man.
All good, dude.
David, you sound you sound like a DJ, like a DJ on a Texas rock station.
Well, dude, I got two things going for me. I got a deep voice, but I'm also half sick. So there's that.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's all good. I sound like I've been chain smoking a little bit.
Yeah.
But tis not the case.
Is it just regular sickness or is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
We
were joking about that earlier. It's like every time you start to feel a little out of the weather, you're like, wait a minute. Do I have COVID? But no, it's just it was just allergies that turned into the whole drainage thing, man. So,
bastard.
What can we do?
Nothing.
I know.
Well, it's really nice to meet you guys. Guys, this fucking record is awesome.
Thanks, man. That's so
awesome.
Cool.
I love.
Thank you.
Yeah, it has so much vibe. Like
that's very cool.
Yeah, and the music is really good, and it's just so like. David, are you like a string arranger and horn? Is that like you guys are both producers, right?
Yes, and that's how we met. I was doing a horn arrangement for a project that Jason was on at a local studio up here in Denton, and so that's how we got to know each other.
I was producing. I actually was hired him and on a recommendation. My guy that I had used in the past was unavailable, and they said. Talked to Dave and he did. He knocked it out of the park on that deal too. That's where we met and we're like, he was leaving and I think everybody had just been paid and he was like, hey, you know, I do all kinds of stuff. So if you've got anything, and I was like, yeah, I kept that. And then I was like, I'm going to reach out to you. And I did. But yeah, that's how it all happened.
Yeah.
He's telling the truth.
Yeah, he is. So, all right. So you were a musician in the Dallas scene, Jason?
Yeah, we started out in Dallas, like based out of there, and then we expanded out and toured. And Dallas was our home.
Like, were you booked by Paul and Swin and the whole?
Oh, listen, of course, Scott Beggs and Dale Brock, all those guys back in the day. Yeah, like totally. Those are the guys that I really needed to get in good with. And then eventually we did. We got lucky.
What did you play in the band?
I played guitar and sang. I was the songwriter, the primary guy, similar to what you did, you know, like kind of did everything and then had two great friends and talented guys with me. And we worked hard.
Yeah. And you see, you slugged it like doing the thing like the regional touring. And
I mean, yeah, we toured all over the U.S. multiple times. We did Australia once. We didn't do Europe, but like we were usually gone about 6 months out of the year. We do our long tours I think we did a couple of 42 days, but most of them are about 28 to 30 days were the long ones. And then, so we did that, you know, every 2 to 3 months for 15 years, a long time.
Man.
Yeah. So until I kind of got, well, I say that we really started touring a lot around 2001, 2002, and it built. And then by about 2015, I was spent and no more. I had kids and I didn't like being away from them. And I was moving into producing anyway, and that was a fun thing. And so, yeah, it was just the right time. I did that live. You did it.
Do you have a studio there? Is that?
I've just got my home studio here that I work out of, just my, you know, Pro Tools set up. And, you know, I've actually been working on some music. So I've got some amps stacked behind me. But yeah, I did all the guitar work on that record, on the Baltimore's record, from right here.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
Yes.
So David, what's your story? Where do you come from? Do you come from the stage?
Man, well, it's funny. It's been a very organic process to get here. I've kind of been, my whole life has sort of been like that. You know, I went to school to get a music ed degree, and then I thought I was going to stay in school up at North Texas, up here in Denton. And I thought I was going to stay in school and do some performance stuff, and a job just fell into my lap. So I was a band director for 10 years, and that was really fun and really cool. But while I was doing that, I started writing more and more music to accommodate kids that I was teaching, you know, ones that were maybe super, super talented and needed to be challenged, and some of the kids that really struggled. And so I wrote for very weird, eclectic type ensembles to kind of play to people's strengths or help kids that needed the help. I started doing that so much that I realized how much I enjoyed that more so than teaching. And so, you know, 10 years down the line, I made the decision to get out of that. And so I continued writing and just kind of built up a network through the years and have been doing it, I guess, man. So if I stopped teaching, that was in 2007 when I stopped. So I've actually been doing it longer than I actually was teaching at this point.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it's just never looked back. You know, if I hadn't have made that decision, I would have never, our path would never have crossed. I guarantee it. You know, it would have been just, there's no time when you're teaching to do much of anything. Even if I had passion to do a lot of writing, it just wouldn't have happened. So,
but see, he was pretty sought after. So I didn't realize when I met him that I was like getting the guy. I was getting the go-to guy, all right, on this project. So in that time, he had established himself, and I wasn't producing that kind of music as much early.
Right,
I just
right.
didn't know it, but we were working in the same studio all this time, just separately, because I used the Echo Lab a lot for a lot of my projects. And but by the time we got together, and then seeing what he was actually doing, he's writing for anybody. He's putting the horns in the studio, performing in the studio. And I just kind of lucked into getting into a partnership with somebody who was the guy, you know, at that. And so that's why the record's so good, is because it's just my simple stuff and all of his years of experience in composition and finding melodies and doing what he wants to do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's
a lot of praise, man.
The icing is definitely so beautiful on this record. Like all the stuff they did, everything about it, like the songs are great. Like, how did you guys, okay, so you met and you're like, hey, if David was like, hey, if you ever need me for anything or you want to do some stuff, I do a lot of different stuff. And so then Jason, did you start making some weird music or something?
Yeah. All right. So that's the whole thing, is he put it in my ear, and I was like, well, listen, I always wanted to do a soul record because I wasn't producing many soul records. I listened to soul music. I mean, I was a punk rock guy, but I was real eclectic. When I was away from punk, I was real versatile. And so I was thinking, here we are, we're going to put out like a kind of a funky soul record with a horn feature. And, I sent him a couple of songs, and they were just kind of like, you know, maybe a little bit Tower of Power funky, and it had a lot of room for his stuff. And then I had all these kind of like just trippy little ambient beats kind of things that could have been hip hop songs. It could have been jazz, like, you know, foundation for jazz tunes. And I started sending them to him, and then he's like, oh, okay. And so he didn't know if I had something specific in mind or what. And he just ran with one. And then I was kind of like, okay, well, we can do this. And it was like I didn't have any idea about what I wanted the songs to be. I didn't want them to stay simple. Some of them kept to the form a little bit, but others went all over the place. And I just wanted him to do whatever he heard. And we kept that foundation, which was kind of that groove, you know. And the guitar parts I had in mind completely changed when I heard his stuff. And now I'm doing a little bit funkier stuff at time, or more ambient, swirly stuff. So it just kind of developed from a weird place. Like, I didn't know where we were going. But when he started liking it and writing with it, it really kind of found its direction. Yeah. And each one has a different direction, you know, they're all over the place.
Oh, they are. That's for sure. And you know, Jason, the thing about Jason's writing is that, you know, what he gave me, even though, you know, even though Jason is saying, well, it was just, you know, very basic stuff. The thing was that each groove that he sent, you know, Jason sent a hook with like with every little foundation of song, you know, he had like a very definitive drum beat and a very definitive bass line and a very definitive, you know, guitar groove. And so that was the inspiration that I had. And I sort of went out on a limb on that very first song that I sent Jason, and I kind of threw the kitchen sink at him, and I preserved everything that he was working with or that he gave me. And then I just, you know, I developed it, and we took some right turns here, some left turns here harmonically, and I added some extra sections. And I thought, well, I hope this guy doesn't think I just stepped all over his feet, and sent it back to him. And, you know, he got back with me kind of immediately and said that he loved it. And so, yeah, the rest is history. We just kind of kept that path going where I would just throw a whole bunch of stuff and have the time of my life, just have so much fun as I'm working on it. And then we would just go back and forth with each other with feedback and sort of, I'd say dial the album in, but yeah, it's kind of crazy. There's not like this, like a story from start to finish in a way, because they're also
a song different styles.
Yeah. But yeah, yeah. It's still,
yeah,
it has been, I'm really proud of how it turned out for sure.
It's unique.
Yeah.
What is the, I mean, I love it when people are creating art for art's sake, but at some point also, right, like you have kids, we're all like, you know, not in our 20s anymore, where you just like go smoke weed at someone's house for 6 months and make a record for your other friends to listen to.
Right.
But what is the, it's sort of like, what is like to get the record heard? I mean, are you guys going to, is there going to be like some, to me, it seems like there would be like a grand performance of this with like the Dallas Symphony Orchestra or something like that.
I mean, we've talked about it. The logistics on doing this thing live would be a bigger undertaking than doing it in a studio. But no, you know, really, you say that this thing, we were really lucky. We had backing from the label, from Lucky Buck Records and Jay Donaldson. And I've worked with him, and his thing is for the art. So we were able to kind of do this like at our own pace. I mean, everybody got paid and, you know, for their work on this. And then what we're doing with it as a piece is just kind of letting it happen. There's a video, there's like videos that two are out. Another one's in editing. One is an animated video, and then they're going to shoot another. So it's going to be, in the end, there's a storyline, even though the videos are coming out of storyline.
What is it?
There's
going to be a story
qualifier and relays. Corazon. That's the one that's about to come out.
Okay. That qualifier one is intense, man.
Yeah. So that whole storyline kind of came from the music. We didn't have the storyline before, but the director, Jason Janik, who's a photographer, you see a lot of his work in like Dallas Morning News and stuff. He and I have worked together before, and I really trust him and his vision. And so I gave him some ideas on a storyline, and he's run with it and really used the music. And it's been cool, because the thing you can think about too is we don't just have to make one movie with this record. We can make two or three or four, you know, and it'd be the score, but in a different setting.
But listening to it, it's hard not to think that you guys didn't at some point have a conversation where you would get like asked like Trent Reznor and the other dude, his partner, to do like scoring films. Is that ultimately like a goal that you guys have as a team?
Well, I'll let David answer that. Yeah, well, I'll let David kind of elaborate, but I will say this, that when David was getting these songs, he's like, man, this is like movie music.
Oh, totally.
And dude. And then it even became more so when he used that kind of Bill Conti Influence and, you know, Morricone, and you can hear some of those grand things come out. But this stuff, I am putting it out there that we would do something. I think we're more on the side of producing, you know, other artists as well. We've got three records we just did with some jazz guys and kind of fusion stuff. We've got a couple of people coming out and kind of using what we do in their settings. If that makes sense. But David, I think with the movie stuff, can we do that, David? Can we do that? Please.
That's just always, you get enough cookie jars open and at some point, you know, you've got enough things going on to where you feel pretty successful with it. But I've always, I thought from the get go, I have done some stuff for very small time, like movie things. But they've just been these little one-off things. It's never felt like I've got to just, now I'm coming from the side of, well, I just created this art for us, for me and for Jason. But as we were doing it, we both talked about how, this sounds like, this sounds like a theme song for a series I just watched on Cinemax or something.
Or like Detective, the blaxploitation influences.
All that, yes.
It calls for it. We would love to do something that.
It also like the record almost serves as a reel. Like, look what we can do. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
and listen, we'll do it for you if you've got the production. That's the thing is that, like he said,
Well,
But I'll tell everyone I know. I know these guys.
I know these guys that will make you something grand. We made it for ourselves, but we wanted it to be the cinematic thing because we at some point decided, hey, we're not pulling. He asked me one too many times about, can I put strings on this for budgetary reasons? And there was no point where I was like, we can't do that. We're going to do anything we want. The late Jay was like, you guys do whatever you want. And then Jay asked us, hey, who's this music for? And we're looking at each other like, we don't know. Like me and Dave, me and Deep, it's for us. We're going to be fans. And Dave Willingham, who mixed, everybody that worked on it loved it. But we're like, so it is. It's kind of our reel.
You should have said it to resume. Quentin Tarantino. Send it to him.
Send it to him.
That's right. That's right. like my mother used to say, with some of the earlier stuff I would write, she would say, oh, the CD sounds so great, I'm going to send this right to Jay Leno, something like that,
he'll respond to that.
So you've talked about doing it live, but it is going to be a massive undertaking if you did.
The production, just the number of musicians we'd have on it, it would require some funding. That's the thing. If somebody wanted to see it, we could do it, no question. And the musicians that we work with are guys that, we use on sessions and that we just did records with a few of them. And, a couple of weeks ago, we're putting their individual, we know that they're capable of just sitting down and doing it. And plus we have the record as reference. But my dream for that would be to totally, set everybody up and let's play it start to finish like it is.
Yeah, big time.
And then, then you get the visual side of it. Do we go that direction with the production? And there's a lot to be thought of, but it would be a dream, but man, it would be an undertaking. One I'm up for, but somebody's going to have to pony up.
I know there's that. And I'll tell you though, it is a question that I have been asked a lot if we're going to perform it live. So it seems like at first it was a lot easier to sort of laugh that off and say, oh, come on, we can never do this live. And now the more times people ask me that question, I'm starting to think
about it every time.
Maybe we should look into this, but
I haven't listened to the record in forever. We just got it. That was the other thing they asked. Is it going to be on vinyl? We just got the vinyl. I still haven't listened to
really?
It. So I haven't listened to it since the test pressing I listened to. And even then I thought, man, I want to do this live. I want to play that guitar live,
Possibilities of you guys, if you're producing somebody, to think of like your sensibilities and getting some, Amy Winehouse-esque, not even like of that exact vein, but like someone with that much vibe and character in their voice that matches your music. It'd be unbelievable, man.
Well, and we're just talking about, and Dave, I'm so verbose. I just I'll talk to the wall. Interrupt me, but we were just talking earlier today.
Well, you can tell that one of you guys at one point was a singer in a rock band. That's for sure.
I had the mic. I had the only mic. but yeah, you know, we're talking about, so one of the girl, this incredible singer, Marion Powers, she's super talented. She sang on the first song, but just a real kind of layery kind of thing. And she's a super talented jazz singer, soul. She does it all. And we were just talking about, you know, the kind of arrangements and what to do, what kind of voicings, like how, and we were just having this conversation, how to use her voice, like some of the instruments we did with the Baltimores, and like let those counter melodies intertwine, let her, because she's so talented. She's like an instrument. And you know, and that's the whole point, is to showcase some of these guys. They're not just tools. They're actually like super talented artists that we have on this record. And, yeah, just doing that in a producing in a production setting that where that's our expertise. I love that stuff. You know, we really get to showcase talent and we like that. We're lucky.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
Jason, do you play out anymore? Like, do you?
I mean, no, I haven't played out. I did a charity thing last December that David helped me set up. And it was me and Brent Best and Isaac Hoskins for a thing. And I was asked to do it and I did it, but I haven't played out probably since maybe 5 years, I think. I'm too tired. I go to bed too early.
I have a few friends that left playing completely and like moved into production. And they all squirm like that when they talk about it. Like, oh, don't make me do it again, man. I've got like a normal life.
I mean, yeah. But you know, with that going, but that the Von Erichs thing, that is something that is still on the table. And actually, technically, another record. We were going to do like a gospel punk record. And but I think at some point I could do it, but it had to be the right. So I don't think I could tour. You know, it would have to be some.
Yeah.
You know, so I couldn't tour anymore. It's just. I had too much fun touring, and I don't want to go back to that life.
Totally, yeah.
It is a younger man's game. It's tiring.
It's a young man's game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done the road dog. And you had asked me that, actually, with your first question, if I had come from a stage background. And, you know, even though that talked about being a band director, I mean, I still put in my time. I paid my dues. I did a lot of band trips across the states in a variety of bands, just all sorts of different kinds. You know, and it was, that's definitely a younger man's
game. Johnny, he's the right kind of musician because he can play a bunch of instruments. He can play in any setting, so he can make money when he wants to. He doesn't have to get out there like we did and like just struggle with our own thing and hope they like it. He can go. And then also his own stuff is great. So, I mean, you know, he did it right. I always tell my kids, if you're going to do it, you know, play a rhythm, you know, play a bass or a horn or something somewhere where you can make money.
David, who were the guys like when you were at North Texas, who were like, some of the guys that I might know some guy, you know,
man,
he's got some guys.
Well, like, you know, maybe some people on the percussion side, drummer side, like, do you know, a drummer named Earl Harvin?
Of course.
Yeah. Earl Harvin.
I thought you might be younger than him is what I thought. Yeah.
I am a few years, younger than that. But I was, when I came up to North Texas, it was about 93.
Oh, okay.
And so a lot of those guys, they were still here.
Right.
It was sort of a changing of the guard, you know. But, you know, for example, that Paul Slavin's group, Ten Hands.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know if you remember them. Again, you know,
I was in this band called Panjandrum, and in like 1989, we opened for them. Because we were managed by Fitzgerald's in Houston. We did like four or five cities opening for them during the Big One Is Coming tour.
Oh, wow.
When they put out that live album. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, so, no, I mean, you know, like hearing groups like that. And then, of course, like when I was here, the bands that were big were like bands like Mingo Fish Trap, Beef Jerky, Mushroom Groovy.
Brave
Combo.
That
was another one. Brave Combo. Oh, yeah, for sure. That was actually the first band that I saw when I was up here in Denton was Brave Combo. And I kind of thought, man, what the hell kind of town is this? This is so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it was so weird and funky. I could not believe what I was seeing. And, on Fry Street, there was a place called Rick's Place, and that was where all the bands played, right?
So and that's so, where we, David and I, were in these venues at the same time, because I lived in Denton from late 94 until like 97. So I was seeing, and even the hip hop scene was really good there with like BaseX and some bands like that. But yeah, Rick's was the place, Fry Street Fair, then Dusu, all those bands, you know, Adam's Farm, all those bands.
Yeah.
So Hawk, all those great bands, man. Purvis. I could, that's what, and why I dug on those bands, and I can't remember. Am I a year older than you, Dave, or you're a year older than me? We, like, it's close. So we were there like at the same time, and we just never, and even then, if we'd known each other then, of course, we wouldn't probably be working together now, but you know, it's weird that we were in the same circles.
We probably were holding one of those big Shiner beers that Rick's Place had, you know, and bumped into each other, but you know, yeah, for sure, man. I mean, that was, horn heavy bands were what blew me away when I was up here in North Texas.
Right.
You know, down where I grew up, you know, you had.
Where'd you grow up?
Oh, I don't know. Corpus Christi.
Oh, yeah.
And so down to the coast. And,
Cantina,
and you had
Santa
about
Fe.
Six or
sorry.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's a, you took me back right
JJ,
there, dude.
Baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Dr. Rockets, did you ever play that venue?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Those were some of the bigger ones. But there was a handful of people that could really play, you know? I mean, and I say a handful of people, like, I was pretty good, but I mean, I wasn't like the level of that I would come to find out when I moved up here to North Texas. Right. So to give you an example of how limited the pickings were, when Selena was going to put out another album right before she was killed, I was hired to play trombone on it.
No
and
shit.
I was a senior in high school, just graduated, you know, so it's kind of like, imagine, you know, the fact, like, if it was up here, you know, there's no way I would have gotten that call. There would have been like 1,000 other people in front of me.
Yeah.
Hey, some of those guys that were hot in the hot bands, like Monch was in Beef Jerky, right?
Yep.
And he and like, so that guy, he played on the record. We just did his record. Like some of those guys are still the most talented guys in the room. You know, it's like, we're so lucky to get to use those. I mean, use them, but then also like having seen them years ago, and I mean, and then see them in that setting, you know, Monch with the flute and everything.
Yeah, it was such a party setting. Like I said, all those horn jam bands. I mean, you know, Snarky Puppy kind of continued the tradition, and then they took it to a whole completely new level of badassery. But it was this funky, you know, B, Function Junction, all that stuff. It was just get go to Rick's and just jam out. And that was...
Who's the God? Why am I drawing a blank on his name? Bobby Sparks.
Bobby Sparks.
He played with Snarky Puppy. He's a keyboard player. Insane fucking jazz guy.
Yes, I know who you're talking about. Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. Oh no. It's just, you know, there hadn't been. It seemed like everywhere you'd walk around back in those days, there was a real cool funk band going on, and it seemed like that kind of went away for a little while, but Snarky brought it back and got,
you know, David,
it went away when punks came in.
You know, David, there everywhere you went, there was a real cool funk band playing. But also everywhere you went, there was a real uncool funk band playing as well. Like, I was in one of those. The band that opened for Ten Hands was like a very uncool funk band, which is why I moved out of funk pretty quickly.
That's funny, man.
But I remember that. I was in the band that I was in after that band, though. I don't know if you guys might have seen us. It was the band I was in that worked with Paul and Swin. It was called Mr. Rocket Baby.
Okay, that was pre
Gowdy.
That was what?
Like 93, 94.
Yeah, so that was like 94, 95.
Cool. Yeah, like we did a lot of shows with like Deep Blue Something, and we even like bands like Tabula Rasa. Remember those guys?
Oh, Tabula Rasa, great band. I've got
dude.
And I've got tablet CDs. I've got all of that
tablet,
stuff.
Yeah, maybe.
Hagfish, you know, all of the great Hagfish is one of my favorite
bands.
Oh, God,
I miss Hagfish. Yeah.
Yeah,
we were booked by Paul and Swin at that time. We had a different manager, but
yeah.
We should have had Paul and Swin, but we had someone else.
Right.
But yeah, Hagfish, man, what a great, whatever happened to those guys?
Well, Zag plays with, Rise Against? He lives in Austin now, the guitar player.
Oh, really?
The bass player, his brother Donnie, plays in the Toadies now.
Oh, really?
George lives in Denton, like, you know, and then Tony's around, but I think, does Tony play? I don't know if Tony plays much, but I'm kind of out of that.
Yeah.
That scene, I've lost track.
There's something about that. I don't know if it's still like that, but that era, it was so familial.
It was the best. Like, you were everybody that was playing shows. Even when I was in high school, and like when I was 16, I came down to Deep Ellum and played my first show in Deep Ellum, right? And so back then, you know, the bands were still coming up, a lot of them, you know, Darlington, Tripping Daisy. Some of those bands are kind of getting there.
The Nixons.
Were coming through a lot, and because they were kind of, they're Oklahoma City, but really Dallas was the spot. And man, it was just a really cool vibe. You could go play shows with people and then you'd go to their show, or they'd be on shows you were going to, you know, and it was a cool vibe down there. I was more of a Deep Ellum. I lived in Denver for a couple years, but I was a Deep Ellum guy, and I was in that scene and lived in downtown Dallas and, you know, off of Lower Greenville, all that stuff. So that was my scene. Those guys were my family back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. It seems like it was like that. Like, you know, and you run into people like out on the road, like Flickerstick or something, and have a couple nights playing with them, and like, just
be in the same town and pop or get with them and go see if you could catch them after load in to grab a bite. That stuff was great. It was just it was fun. And then it got that way with even bands like, you know, on that level, you're touring on the same level from other cities you would see. And it was the whole vibe, the whole touring band scene was like real familial.
Yeah. I thought so too.
It was cool.
I thought that even like there was a good, I don't know. I missed those times. I didn't.
It was fun.
Yeah. I think I appreciated them a lot when I was in those times, but now I just am like, oh man, just that was just, everyone was,
it was alive.
Bros and like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good.
Yeah. And it was like that on the horn side, like the horn section side too. Cause you know, you'd sub in for like, oh, I'm playing, you know, I'm subbing for my buddy in Mingo Fish Trap, but I'm also going to help out and play a show with Mushroom Groovy, or I'm going to do something with this other group, you know, out of Dallas or whatever. And everybody kind of knew each other too. And it was really, I don't know. It was just really,
I think that horns, that's a real brotherhood there, because you guys are really working in concert like you do. You fill in for each other. Somebody needs a trombonist. Who are the trombonists? Who are the go-tos? And I think that's a real, and learning more about the kind of music that we're doing and moving into that, it's really been fun. Like I said, with us producing those guys, they all know each other. So you can see, they all have done sessions together. They've done show. They're doing shows, doing all the damn Christmas shows together. And, you know, so they're all familiar. And it really is like cool to be able to see that. Cause I don't really have the time to get out and do it, but it's cool to see it. You know, that those guys are really brothers.
Yeah. So where did the name come from?
Oh, this is all Jason. Get a buddy. So,
well, the deal with the name is that I'm a huge baseball fan, right? My son plays ball and I love, you know, there's probably some Rangers stuff in the background. And so I was looking at old, and I love baseball history particularly. So I was looking at old like Negro League teams, and I didn't want to do anything, you know, like Homestead Grays, the Monarchs, and I found one that was from like 1887. It was the old history of the Baltimore Elite Giants, but this team was called the Lord Baltimores, and they were like 2-4 in 1887. But it doesn't matter. I just thought the name, I was like, man, that's like a cool, weird, like what, like the Lord Baltimores. And I had a couple ideas, but I ran it by Dave one time. He was about this time 2 years ago when we were getting in. I was like, man, I got a name for this. He was driving to a show, and I told him, he's like, I dig it, man. It's cool. I don't know what it means. And then I told him what it means. He's like, that's cool that way too. But
yeah.
That's where it came from.
Did you watch that Ken Burns doc? Man,
I've worn that thing out.
Oh, you own it.
I would get into the studio and like when the studio session would be over, I can't sleep. And I would watch that at the Echo Lab on sessions. I'd be in for like 7 days. And I would watch it at least once. And I might even go back and watch another just because, you know, the studio time, the downtime, that's actually where I saw it first in its entirety at the studio.
Do you ever watch it, David?
We're talking about which Ken Burns
one? Ken Burns baseball.
No, man, I have not seen that. I've seen other things, other stuff, but I'm not a
smart. He's a smart musician. He's seen Ken Burns jazz, right?
Well, I definitely have seen that. Yes,
I've seen that too.
Did you guys see that country music one?
I haven't watched it yet. I'm saving it for when I'm like sick or something. Yeah, I've heard it's amazing.
How about that Beatles?
I did watch like one early episode.
Did you guys watch Get Back?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, dude. We've been talking about that. That's been the topic to talk about on all of the Christmas shows in the green rooms.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We talk about just everything. So, yeah.
What was your takeaway from it, David?
Oh, dude, I loved every bit of it. I mean, it was magical to see. It was really cool to see the collaborative process.
Yeah.
That's what was so killer. You know, just the fact that they were, like a legit, I mean, they were like a band. Like they just got together and made music. Like it wasn't like even about rehearsing. It was like they got together and they wrote stuff. They just created together and they played all the time. And it was like everybody was just on each other's wavelength. And just to see that.
Yeah, they evolved together. That's great.
Pretty special, man. It's not, you know, I mean, that was, whew.
Yeah.
It was emotional, man. It really was.
Yeah, that's. Ringo blew my mind. That was, I had a new, like, I've always loved Ringo, but I had a whole new, like, God damn, that guy's just on.
He gains your respect in that documentary.
And I gotta say, he comes in on one of them and he's like, oh guys, I'm not gonna lie, I'm in bad shape. I think it looked like he was in bad shape every single day. Like, he looked pretty hungover, just leaning on his drums all the time, like, whoa.
Yeah.
But he just kicked ass.
Yeah.
So have you guys been starting? I know that you just put out this record. Have you started any other pieces yet? Are there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what we were talking about with Marion and doing her project, you know, kind of writing some things. It's like, okay, so I got to have a budget phone call and I want to set some time aside for us. And I was like, you know, and Marion, we're talking about Marion's thing. We're talking about our stuff. And I've told interview, I'm probably up to about 20 tunes, but I'm like, I got a backpack full of hooks, buddy. I got and I've sent him a couple of things, just like oddly asking him about like chordal stuff and be like, you know, I'm playing this thing. And, you know, I'm asking
him,
I'm like, so what'd you think? You know, it's busy time for him because it's December and, you know, all the holiday stuff, but it's about to get time. And one thing about this project is a whole pandemic hit. So we really got to focus on this remotely, obviously. And that's how we are going to work. That's how we work.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that I've got a bunch of stuff to run by him. And I think if I can get his ear for about a week, then I can start thinking about it. Because it's a long process with this, but I think we can do it. It took us about 2 years last time. I think we can do it in a year this time.
I'm sure we can. We've probably got at least 10 years worth of projects between the two of us that we've talked about all over the phone with each other about what we're excited about doing. And so
we just did three. I think we'll do two more and then ours. And then we do the other three or four. And so the Lord Baltimore's are going to be putting music out, but we're really saving. We're talking about spreading the calendar with our own music. And you know, so we've got our stuff that we're kind of saving up for. I think summertime's a fun time to record, you know?
Yeah, agreed.
Now doing it remotely makes it easier. And especially when everyone kind of gets in their own life where they need more time to themselves, you can't just sit around at David's house for 12 hours a day waiting for him to come up with a string thing.
Right.
come from a time where you had to do that.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah,
and that was fun.
Do you, I mean, I know it's practical and it works, but if you had your druthers, would you rather be together doing it?
I think that I wanted, so for the next thing, when I was talking about like putting the time in for our, you know, budgeting in, I was thinking like, well, we could do it remote. Like he can work in his studio, I can work in mine, but it would be cool if I could get him here, because I have a whole workspace over here that he could come set up at, and then we could be right here just bouncing stuff off and then, you know, recording it. And so if I got that kind of time to like, and we can like bring him, because I live in Houston now.
Oh, you do?
So fly him down. Yeah. And so it'd be easier for him to come set up here, I think. I don't know. I could set up anywhere. So, but I would love to do that because I do. I have things that we have got to discuss, and you know, and I want to be cool. Just like, hey, let's just listen to this instead of going back and forth. With definitely, I want to sit in the room. Where? I always have.
Yeah, for sure, man. I was gonna say, you know, for me, it's like I go through the two parts of my sort of creative muse. You know, I can definitely. I can definitely enjoy collaborating with somebody in person and bouncing ideas back because there's complete magic that happens. But I also like to do the thing where I have to find the absolute quietest moment in the world.
Yeah,
and so it's like at four something in the morning, and I'll get up before anybody even thinks about getting up, and I can knock out just a whole bunch of like really things that just, because you know, there's just nothing that can get in the way at that point. You know what I mean?
Like,
it's
and I think that even if we were working together, we would have to work separately. Like, it's almost like my stuff that I bring, I would have to have it prepared. I do a lot of pre-production anyway, and so I would kind of have to have some stuff prepared. And then we discuss, and then I think we would work together, but alone, the way the two of us are, it would be, and it's really a good balance the way we do work. And it, being in the studio together, it was, it's kind of like, I did more of the rhythm section, the foundation stuff. And he's, you know, he's got his whole world of strings and horns and charts and all that. And so we work good separately. And I, because I have a lot of respect for David. He's my biggest musical influence for the past 2 years. And so he can totally be, I have the most trust for him, anybody I've ever worked with. So, you know, it's easy to back away and say, no problem, man. I'll wait to see what you send me. I'm going to love it.
Yeah.
Cool, dude. Thanks, man.
Where in Houston are you?
I'm down on the south side near NASA in a little area called Clear Lake.
Clear Lake, baby.
Yeah, we're down here closely because we always got a little breeze. It's not like Houston, but I'm a Dallas guy. I grew up in North Texas, north of Dallas, and Dallas is still, if I've been here 13 years, I think Dallas, I'm a Dallas guy, you know, a Dallas Denton guy.
Damn.
And I lived in Austin for a couple of years too, but I'm a Dallas guy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
When did you live in Austin?
97, 98.
Okay.
I lived in Denton from like 94 up to 97. Some guys that I had known from Denton had moved down. And they asked me to come kind of front a three piece. We had worked together a little bit. And so I was in Denton. It was a good opportunity. And I came down and worked with the guys that are fantastic musicians, did like 2 years. And then we just kind of all went different directions, just on the fly. Still get along, still talk to them for the most part, but I moved and started focusing on my stuff. One guy, he ended up being Billy Joe Shaver's drummer for a long time. Oh. Another guy moved to New York, and we just kind of,
those cats. Well, dudes, you guys made a great record.
Like, man, that's so nice, dude.
Man, I love it. And I can't wait to hear more and hear what else you guys do. And it's great to see you again, Jason.
Yeah, been years,
a
lot of years.
David, it's really nice to meet you, man. This record really is. It's very special, same. You know. It has a very special vibe to it. But at some point, I'm going to need more than 9 songs from you people.
Yeah, all right.
Oh, we got them, baby. We just got to get in there and hash them out.
We're waiting on that movie deal that you're going to come up with too, right?
I'm trying to think of a famous producer's name. What am I, Jerry Bruckheimer over here?
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, everybody gets paid, man. You get us a movie gig, you're in on it.
All right.
Yeah,
you're good people, man. Well, everyone should get out there and check out this record,
Johnny.
The Lord Baltimore's. Yeah, man, great talking to you guys.
Great talking.
Yeah, I'll let you know, right, guys, know when this drops.
All right, thanks so much. Talk soon.
Thank you.
All right,
bye. See you, Dave.
Bye.
See ya.
That's Jason Vandergriff and David J. Pierce, the Lord Baltimore's. Go and check out their self-titled debut album, available now wherever it is you find it, the Lord Baltimore's. Enjoy it, man. It's fucking great. I promise you, you're hearing that song right now, Qualifier. Such a great song. I played it for you guys. Just special for you guys. You'll hear the rest of it in just a minute. And hey, gang, don't forget, when you're out there checking out the Lord Baltimore's, get involved with How Did I Get Here. So subscribe to us on all the platforms that we're available, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher, anywhere. New shows every Tuesday and every Friday. Every once in a while, I'll drop 3 shows a week. Every once in a while, I'll drop a From the Vault, an old episode, because we're up to 1,129 episodes out now. All right, gang, and if you're listening this Friday, January 14th, come on out tonight to Antone's. Doors are at 8, shows at 9, Skyrocket. Come on out, mask up, and enjoy the rock sounds of Skyrocket. Now, enjoy the rest of the song qualifier from the Lord Baltimore's, and please have a very safe weekend. Be healthy, be safe, do the things that you have to do, and let's get down.